Nearly 2 weeks down now, with only 1 week to go in the crucial talks at Stormont, will they get the institutions up and running again? Well, a major sticking point could be what information about the troubles the British government is willing to reveal. Yesterday, the Secretary of State told the Commons that some information from the troubles can never enter the public domain because it would put lives at risk. James Brokenshire was responding to a question from his predecessor at the NIO, Theresa Villiers.
Mr. Speaker, the government and the police have disclosed unprecedented amounts of information about the troubles, some of it extremely sensitive. But will the Secretary of State agree that there is some information which is so sensitive that it can never go out into the public domain because it would put lives at risk if it did?
Yeah. Secretary of State.
I do agree with my right honourable friend, and with all of her experience as a previous Secretary of State, she knows the sensitivity and importance of these issues of national security. National security remains the primary responsibility of the UK government, and in our actions we will certainly continue to have that at the forefront of our minds.
But here's the thing, Gerry Adams will make a speech later today. In it he will say, quote, "Getting the institutions in place will be a challenge given the DUP's stated position on an Irish Language Act, a Bill of Rights and other fundamental requirements." And, this is the bit we're talking about this morning, the British government's obstructive approach to legacy issues and other matters. So Gerry Adams saying that this is one of the key issues now. Sinn Féin's Gerry Kelly has been speaking to me over literally the last few seconds. And I asked him about this potential stumbling block between what Brokenshire said yesterday and what Gerry Adams will say in his speech today.
Well, absolutely. And just let me pinpoint this, because James Brokenshire said about people not being in danger is actually something we agreed with, and which victims and survivors actually agree with. Article 2 covers us all. There should not be anybody put in danger. They also, one of the issues that they raised during the talks was present-day methodologies. They don't want to show what present-day methodologies would be. The families have absolutely no interest in that. So to be very clear about this, there's no disagreement around the question that Theresa Villiers asked. What the disagreement is that the British government are using a veto to hold back the truth, to stall people. And if you want to know where their intent is, then let me point out that the intent is around using victims as bargaining chips. If you take the legacy inquest, which some are now waiting 45 years, what is that? Why have they had to wait that long? It's not because people were in danger, it's because they refused to give out the truth. Most of which, not all of which, I would not put anybody's life in danger.
But how do you know, and how do we square that circle? If they say it will put people's lives in danger, then either we take them at their word or we don't.
No, that's not true. What you have to break this down. So they're saying we agree with Article 2 compliance, which is under the ECHR, European Convention of Human Rights. So there's no disagreement around that at all. There's actually no disagreement around this. Where the disagreement is that the Secretary of State wants to maintain a veto, which he will decide what goes out and what doesn't. And that's the difficulty. If you take the Ombudsman's office, which already exists and has existed for a considerable period of time, they have a duty under Article 2 as well. They have a duty not to give out this information. And yet no one can accuse the Ombudsman of ever putting anybody's life in danger, because they will not give out the type of information that would do. And by the way, the families do not want that type of information. This is more about stalling. It's more about the suspicion that, because of the experience we have, they do not want to give out any information. They want to hold this process up. They want to be in charge. They do not want to embarrass the present government, the past government, or indeed any future government.
Is there much information coming from the IRA?
Well, the issue, frankly, is not around the IRA, because if there's a HIU and ICIR, what Republicans, certainly all the political parties who are there have said is, well, we will do as we will be part of this. I've been asked this many times myself. So that's not the issue. The issue, the hold-up, is with the British government.
Yeah, but Gerry, it is the issue to some people who don't share your perspective, which is, you know, did the IRA even keep records and files? If the same is expected of the IRA, will they have the information stored, collected, to hand over?
Well, first of all, I would doubt that very much. It would be very foolish if they did do that. Any organisation.
So therefore, it's not an equal platform.
You've raised this before, so let me deal with it. There have been over the conflict and since then, something in the region of 25,000 people have gone through jail. So there's a huge amount of information there already in the records. If you want to talk about balance, then on the other side, there have been something like four British soldiers who have ever gone through the courts who were convicted of murder, and all of them were released within a few years. And all of them, to my knowledge, were actually allowed back into the British Army. So if we want to talk about balance, then let's look at the balance here. This is not about balance. This is about listen to, you know, Theresa May, listen to James Brokenshire when they were talking about an amnesty for British soldiers.
But we have dealt with it before, so I just want to expand on it a little. We've only a few minutes left anyway. But you say you would be surprised if the IRA kept records. That's what you said, right?
Yes.
So there's no chance of getting more information out of the IRA?
No, that's not true. The way these processes, and of course there are a number of in the architecture like ICIR, the information recovery, as well as the HIU. The HIU is an investigative process anyway, so that will go along as an investigative process, as has always been the case. The ICIR is people coming forward, and when they're asked questions, being prepared to give that, with the result that that information cannot be used in a court. So there is a facility for people to come forward and answer questions, especially of loved ones who want to know what happened to their loved ones. That needs to be read across the board. So the British government has been prepared to do that as well.
How are the talks going?
Well, this, as you're pointing out, is one of the key issues in it. But we are there. I'm on my way up to it now. We have been here every day. We have met all of the parties, including the two governments and all the other parties. We will continue. We have a determination to get this. You know, victims and families have been waiting for this so very long that we need to the crack this. But we can't avoid this issue. And the British government are the ones who can sort that out. And let me just, I don't know if I said this, but I'm just say this. The Ombudsman, as it sits, has to take into consideration all of these duties, as would the Chief Constable, for instance, and anybody else who deals with this type of information. Yet nobody can accuse the Ombudsman of ever having put anybody's life in danger or indeed have given out any methodologies in modern times which would endanger anybody's life.
And has there been any progress so far in the legacy issue?
Well, we are going through, as you will know now, we've been given a number of papers and we're going through them basically line by line. So we are going through all of that. But this is a huge stumbling block, and what the British need to do is explain why they will not give the power that is already with the Ombudsman to the new director, whoever that person might be, because they have to be trusted with the information, as a chief constable would have to be and as an Ombudsman.
There's not going to be a deal within the next 10 days, is there?
Well, we want this to be sorted out within the three-week period. If the political will is there, and that's what we're talking about in this interview, then we can crack this.
Do you think the political will is there from your former Fresh Start partners, the DUP?
Well, the DUP have always said, actually, on this issue, that it was between ourselves and the British government. So the British government are the key here. It would be very foolish of the DUP then to come in with a more draconian position than the British government.
To take one of your campaign slogans and use it, maybe if you had shown the Secretary of State more respect and not come off with all this waffle, waffle, waffle stuff, there would be a very better environment for agreement and negotiation.
Well, unfortunately, and you know, people use whatever language they use, but let me repeat that, and there's sometimes language used that shouldn't be used, but waffle, waffle, waffle accurately described what was going on at that point. Now, I hope we are past the waffle stage. I hope we're into actually getting things done. We are sitting down. We are talking to all the parties on a daily basis, and we are determined to get this
started. Even a possibility, because I'm listening very carefully to what the DUP have been saying over recent days about this demand from Sinn Féin that Arlene Foster isn't their designated appointee for First Minister, or else you won't go into government. Do you hold out even a remote possibility that Michelle O'Neill would step aside if the DUP equally demand it?
Well, there are reasons why we said, and just to be very accurate in this, they can designate anybody they want. What we have said is we will not support her because it needs our support. We will not support her while the investigation is going on into the RHI. Now, that's what the election was called over. That was the straw broke the camel's back, and we can't ignore that now. So our position on that is quite clear. There is no reason whatsoever for Michelle O'Neill to stand.
But if it is one of the DUP's preconditions, like Arlene Foster is a precondition for you, would you consider it?
Let's not deal with hypotheses. If the DUP are going to put up a demand, let them put it up, and then let's look at it.
So you would look at it?
No, we wouldn't look at it. I'm saying, let's see if they put it up.
So one rule for you and one rule for them.
No, it isn't two rules. It isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. There were clear issues here which brought not only the DUP, but the institutions into disrepute. Now, that affects everybody. And people demand, and the anger, and I got it on the doors going around before and after the election, the anger was around the way that this whole issue was held.
All right, and
Arlene Foster, innocent or otherwise, and she may be absolutely innocent, but Arlene Foster, as a minister and then as the first minister, was at the core of it.
All right, and we literally have a number of seconds here, so if you can be succinct, it would be great. Do you get a sense that the DUP will consider Arlene stepping aside?
That is something that the DUP have to answer, and a question they'll need to have to give to them.
But do you get a sense in these talks that they will consider it?
Well, the only sense that I get in these talks is that there is certainly a will to come out the other end with a resolution.
Okay, Gerry Kelly,
and the rest of it, though.
Thank you very much indeed.